Support for Commodity Week comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This program, of course, was recorded the 6th day of January, but earlier in the week as I'm traveling with the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. If you'd like to visit with us on the road, we're in Peoria, Moline, Malta, Springfield, Champaign, and Mount Vernon this week and next. You can find details on the CropSci Conferences website. That's CropSciConferences, all one word, .com. I'd like to see you at one of those events. We're joined now by ag economist from the University of Illinois, Daryl Good, to take a look at last year and the commodity prices and market and what might be expected for the coming year. Daryl, thanks for being with us. Let's start by going through last year and the crop that farmers have in the bin. Maybe we should start in the fall of 2013. And what the ending stocks look like, what exports were expected to be, and how things unfolded over the marketing season.
Well, if we look at corn starting in the fall of 2013, the projection was for very modest recovery in corn exports from the extremely low level that we had the previous year. And in fact, exports did start out in the first half of that marketing year at a very slow pace, but built as the year went on. And as the year turned out, we exported about 500 million bushels more corn than had been expected in the fall of 2013. So we're working with a very large crop in 2013, expecting a fairly sharp buildup in stocks, but exports bailed us out to some extent, and we ended up with a year-ending stocks of about 1.2 billion bushels. Certainly an increase from the extremely low levels coming out of the drought of 2012, but very modest inventories that kept prices at a reasonably high level through 2013-14 marketing year. Soybeans pretty much unfolded as expected, except that we ended the year 2013-14 with extremely tight stocks of soybeans, tighter than we've ever been before, and certainly tighter than we imagined that we could be. And so the large crop of 2013 was used up, thanks to China for the most part, and very robust exports. And what we found as we got into September then of 2014, at the end of that marketing year, is with a bit of a delayed harvest of the 14 crop and very tight stocks of the 13 crop, that soybean were hard to find, and we saw bids at processors really shoot up, processing margins, demand for soybean meal pushed those prices to extremely high levels. So we had a period of a few weeks there when soybeans were really hard to come by, and we put a lot of upward pressure on soybean meal and soybean prices. But then that all kind of softened as we got into the full swing of harvest last fall.
So producers looked at that, and they remained fairly bullish, despite the fact that there was a really big crop coming on, much bigger than, as it turns out, we think, at least, than many had projected. They may not have made as many sales as they hoped at this point they had, and they also ended up with a lot more grain, both corn and soybeans, than expected. We had record crops when we got to the fall harvest of 2014.
Right. That was kind of a slow unfolding event as we got into the planting season of 2014 and then subsequently the growing season, that we started out with pretty modest expectations about production. But as the summer went and growing conditions remained generally favorable, then prospects obviously improved, and we started seeing forecasts of much larger crops, and prices did then come down fairly sharply as the growing season went on. All indications are that on average, producers did not really forward price a large part of the 2014 crop. There's no official record of that, no public data on farmers' pricing behavior, but just anecdotally, it would suggest that farmers did not forward price a lot of the crop. You get further evidence of that when you look at the average price received for crops delivered in September, October, November, which would include those forward priced bushels. And those prices on average were not extremely high, not much above the spot cash price. So that says that there weren't many high priced bushels averaged into those deliveries. Now, maybe some of those were for January 2015 delivery, and we'll certainly be watching that price to see if there's a bit of a blip there that would reflect those forward sales. But I think in general, farmers were a little slow in recognizing the big crop and the extent of the price decline, particularly in corn. And we did get very sharp declines going into the 1st of October with cash bids in many parts of Illinois for corn going under $3 a bushel and soybeans down to about 9.5. Obviously, we've recovered sharply from that, but I think the extent of the price decline was surprising. At the end of the day, it was probably overdone, that the market kind of switched from we can't believe the crop is this big to we think the crop is much bigger than it really is. I think at the end of the growing season, we started seeing some really very large production forecasts coming out of the private sector that probably contributed to that October weakness that probably pushed prices lower than it should have been.
And then, of course, as we look forward to just next week, on the 12th of January, USDA will start to reconfigure everything. We'll have the final crop production numbers for the year. How accurate do you suppose they will be, and what's your estimate of what they'll show?
Well, if we look at corn, there's mixed expectations and probably more than the usual uncertainty about what that final estimate will show. We always have a bit of uncertainty about how the final yield estimate will be tweaked. That's always based on the very large ag survey that NASS does in December. I think the market is leaning towards maybe just a marginally lower yield. Some of the private estimates that have come out in front of that report have been just marginally lower than the November forecast. But I think the emphasis really will be on the acreage side this year. Typically, we don't expect to see much change in the planted or harvested acreage estimate in January compared to the November forecast. But because of the discrepancy between the NASS acreage data and what has been reported to FSA so far this year, the market, I think, has a little bit more uncertainty about where that harvested acreage number will come in from the December survey. My bias is thinking that maybe acreage will be a little bit lower than what had been previously forecast, although when you look at private estimates, they're on both sides of the November forecast. So taken together, my expectation is that the 14.4 billion bushel production estimate that we saw in November, we may see that just slightly lower in the January number. Significantly lower enough to change the paradigm on adequate supplies, probably not, but maybe a few million bushels smaller than what we've been looking at. Soybeans, I think, you know, just looking historically and again looking at the acreage data that we have in front of us from FSA at this point, your judgment would be just a small change in the production number one way or another in January compared to the November forecast. I would be surprised if that change is enough really to alter the balance sheet significantly in either direction. So the focus will clearly be on the corn number and on the production side because of this unusual uncertainty about acreage and the always present uncertainty about yield.
In one of our previous conversations, I believe you told me that 100 million bushels, one way or the other, doesn't make as much of a difference as it used to when we raised a 6 billion bushel corn crop or a 9 billion bushel corn crop, which wasn't all that long ago. Now we have a 14.4, maybe not that big. So my question is, what size does change the paradigm? Is it 100 million? Is it 200 million bushels in swing? How big a swing do we need to really change things?
Yeah, I think you need to see, if you're looking at projections of year-ending stocks of about 2 billion bushels, and we've got current corn prices in Illinois just hovering under $4 a bushel, what kind of production and ending stocks change would you need to push cash prices above that level? I think, a couple hundred million bushels would certainly do it.
So if we got to 1.8?
I mean, if we were looking at a 1.8 carryover, I think that would continue to fuel the strength that we've seen in cash corn prices since the 1st of October. It's a little difficult to be precise on that because the current price reflects some expectation, I think, that stocks number may, that projection may get a little smaller. So some of that's already in the market. And so it's always a gauge of how does the number compare to what the market was expecting. We have not all of that change in the ending stocks will come from just the production number. On corn, the December 1 stocks number, which will kind of reveal the pace of feed and residual use of corn during the first quarter of the marketing year, will have implications for expectations about year-ending stocks as well. So it's going to be that combination of any change in the production number and the pace of feed and residual use that's revealed by the December 1 stocks that will all then get built into the projection of year-ending stocks. And to keep corn prices going up, we do need to see that projection come down by 150, 200 million bushels.
All right. So let's go into the usage numbers, and I'll come back to the feed and residual figure. That one's the toughest one to get a handle on. It only comes up with the grain stocks numbers. Export figures and then, of course, ethanol are easier to track.
Right.
How are we doing on those fronts?
Well, in the case of exports, it looks like first quarter exports will be close to 400 million bushels, about 50 million bushels more than we exported in the first quarter last year. We've got to remember last year exports started off very, very slowly in the first quarter and even in the second quarter of the marketing year, and then really accelerated rapidly in the last half of the marketing year. This year, we've seen USDA projecting smaller exports for the year, but we've seen better exports in the first quarter. So we know that number from the Census Bureau. That's a pretty hard number. We're going to be right at 400 million bushels. And so we'll use that to project December stocks. On ethanol use, again, we kind of back into that based on the estimates of ethanol production. For the first quarter of the marketing year, ethanol production was about 5% larger than it was during the first quarter last year. So if that translates into a 5% increase in corn use for that product, and then we'll probably see about steady use of corn in the other processing categories, sugar, starch. That's pretty constant year to year, quarter to quarter. So in total, in the processing use, ethanol and other products, probably about 1.6 billion bushels of corn in the first quarter. So 2 billion bushels domestic processing and export, how much in the feed and residual category. Expectations certainly are in a very wide range because of the nature of the residual category. But last year, 2.4 billion bushels, which was very large, was a very large percentage of the total for the year. And I would guess we'll probably be somewhere close to that 2.4, 2.5 billion first quarter this year. And if so, then that means December 1 stocks at about 11.2 billion bushels, assuming no change in the production number. And so I think that is kind of your stake in the ground, saying 11.2 adjusted by any change in the production number then we'll see where actual stocks come in compared to that, and the market will react to the magnitude of that surprise, if there is any, in either direction.
Looking forward, is there any reason to believe that the low, very low price at this point, and this may be relative low price, that is, of crude oil to have an impact on the commodity markets more broadly? Because fuel is protein, is energy, all in all, and food, feed, they're all energy of one sort or another.
Right. I think the most direct impact is probably in the biofuels sector. What you're seeing is that with a really dramatic decline in crude oil and gasoline prices, that ethanol in particular has now become more expensive than gasoline, which is kind of a rare condition. That we don't think that will impact domestic consumption of ethanol very much because of the mandates. We'll probably continue to blend right up to 10% of our total motor fuel supply with ethanol. But where the impact may eventually be felt is in the export market for ethanol. We've had a very robust export market in 2014 because ethanol was cheap relative to gasoline. And now we flip that upside down, and I think we might have our exports at some risk. What's the magnitude of that? If, for example, we 2014, we're probably exported around 800 million gallons of ethanol. Half of that went to Canada. That's probably not at risk because they have a mandate as well for blending ethanol. So that leaves 400 million gallons. Non-Canadian exports, how much of that is at risk with flipping the price ratio of ethanol and gasoline? Some portion of that, and then you back that into corn demand. So maybe a few million bushels of corn demand at risk because of lower gasoline prices. I don't really see much of an impact in the other sectors of demand for corn. We'll have to watch that, the export pace. The frustration is there's a tremendous lag in the export reporting of ethanol from the Census Bureau, so it'll be a while before we know that.
Well, let's transition to soybeans, but stay with exports for a moment on corn. You mentioned that corn exports were ahead of pace compared to last year, and that was faster than what USDA had expected at the beginning of the year. Are your expectations that we'll be above USDA's exports by the time we get to the end of the year?
At this juncture, you'd have to say no, that our exports are better than last year, but slower than the pace we need to reach the USDA projection. So we need to see shipments accelerate fairly significantly from the pace we're at. On the flip side, when we look at the amount of corn that's been sold for export, that number is pretty much in line with the USDA's number. So it does say if we export what we've sold, we should be able to reach the USDA projection. So we're slow in shipping, pretty rapid in sales. And what we need to see is the shipments catch up to those sales numbers. And if they do, we'll reach the USDA number. I don't look for them to change their projection in the January WASD report.
China is the place that imports soybeans at a very rapid pace, using almost as many soybeans as either the U.S. or South America, North America or South America. They use one crop or nearly that much in a given year. Will they continue to do that? Will they demand more soybeans? They are an enormous user of soybeans from the globe.
They really are, and we've seen, you know, the 10-year trend is continuing to increase. Obviously, that rate of increase will slow because it's been so rapid that their market for soybean meal will not continue to grow at the same pace. But we really don't see a reversal in that demand. We can hold steady or increase slightly going forward. And that means the analogy is, in my mind, is that you've got ethanol demand for corn that provides a constant a base of consumption that's pretty large, around 5 billion bushels a year, that really puts a floor under corn consumption. And you have kind of the same thing with Chinese demand for soybeans. You have this ever-present demand for large quantities of soybeans that puts a floor under the total demand picture. Just to put that in perspective, for the first quarter of the marketing year, it looks like the U.S. exported about 820 million bushels of soybeans. The previous record for any quarter was last year, the same quarter, we exported about 675 million bushels. So we've just been shipping soybeans. We've had consecutive weeks in November over 100 million bushels a week, and sales are large. And at this juncture, China accounts for 60% of our total soybean export commitments for this year. So a lot of eggs in one basket, but it looks like it's going to hold together. And we'll certainly see very large record exports of soybeans this year.
A few years ago, you and Scott Irwin put together some data and came up with new price level midpoints, what we call the new plateau. What are those, and are you still happy with them?
Yeah, we went through an exercise saying that because of ethanol and then subsequently Chinese demand for soybeans, that we had probably entered a new era of higher commodity prices in nominal terms. For perspective, the previous era we judged to be from about 1973 through 2006, a very long period, very volatile prices, but really did not trend up or down during that period, and corn averaged about $2.40 a bushel. Soybeans something over $6 a bushel during that 35-year period. So we said, what's the equivalent price in a new era that looks like it began in about 2007 because of ethanol and Chinese soybean demand? The equivalent price in our calculation would be about $4.60 for corn and about $11 for soybean. So we said, in this new era that began in 2007, of some undetermined length, we don't know how long the new era would last, you would expect on average $4.60 corn, $11 soybeans, but also pointed out that you would see a lot of variation around that average, just as we did in the previous era. In the early going, in the first part of this new era, prices have averaged well above our forecast of the mean. Corn has been about $4.90, soybeans about $11.50. Obviously, we're now below that projection, which is not unexpected, that if you're going to average $4.60, you'll spend some time above that, sometime below it. So we think, because ethanol demand is not going away, it may not increase, but it's solid. Chinese soybean demand is not going away. Production will vary from year to year. We're coming off of back-to-back very large crops in the U.S. We won't do that every year. That those projections are probably still realistic over a longer period of time, $4.60 corn, $11 soybeans. How quickly we get back there from the current level will be primarily a function of crop size, I think. That could happen as quickly as this year if production suffers somewhat, or it may be delayed if we have another year of large crops.
Given that, going forward, I'm going to ask you something that's within your purview, but mostly something that Jonathan Kappas and Gary Schnitke and a few others talk about, which is farm bill decisions. Those are based largely for corn and soybeans in particular on cash prices and a decision between PLC, or price loss coverage, and ARC, our county, that is, not ARC individual, but our county, with a break even, Gary has figured, of $3.30 per cash price. So above that, ARC county, below that, PLC is the decision. But that's over the long run for a five-year period, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18, maybe longer if they manage to extend the farm bill, or not to put a new one in place, I suppose. Right. So the question is, do you think under the new era that we are likely to be above or below that $3.30 cash market? And that's a national number. It's actually put out once a month by USDA under their WASD figures.
Yeah, they project that every month, and we don't know what the actual price is until the end of the year, but we have a running projection of that as we go through the year. For the current year, it's $3.50 as a projection, and we've been pretty close to that so far this year. But over a five-year horizon, my feeling is we will average probably well above the $3.30 break-even price that has been calculated as the break-even between Arc County and PLC for Illinois corn producers. And if that's the case, obviously, then that would swing you towards the Arc decision rather than the PLC. I mean, there is room to hedge that bet because my understanding is you can make different decisions on different FSA farms, so you don't have to be in the same program for both. So for producers that have multiple FSA farms, there is opportunity to hedge, do a little of both, but I think in general the Arc County probably is more attractive for corn.
Daryl, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois. You can find him again always on our website at willag.org. On the Farm Doc Daily website, he posts an article each and every Monday in the afternoon, sometime after 12 o'clock Central Standard Time. And that address is farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This has been Commodity Week.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.